Welcome to the daily VFN Radio Highlights, where we're keeping the conversation light at VFNTV.com. Enjoy.
There's been talk in the Middle East about Israel getting together, the United States sponsoring basically peace talks between Israel and Palestine, mm-hmm. the Palestinian Authority. And the Blaze is reporting that Israelis and their supporters have begun to voice fears that these peace talks, of course, sponsored by the Secretary John Kerry, United States, mm-hmm. Which is set to really start this week, they're fearful, they're concerned that these talks are going to have dangerous side effects of sparking new violence, just like has occurred in the past. You know, the problem sometimes is that we don't take time to look in the context of history. Mm-hmm. We just get some bit of information today, and we just make quick judgments as if nothing's ever happened before in the past. We mm-hmm. have no grid. We didn't take time to learn or educate ourselves or get the full facts of what's actually happening. But we take everything at face value and say, oh, well, this is just what's happening. Mm-hmm. It's really important to have perspective. It's really important to understand that this has been a conflict that's been going on for quite a while. And there's been numerous attempts for Israel to be able to share some land with the Palestinians. I mean, this has been going on for so many times, and they've mm-hmm. rejected it. They keep rejecting it. And in fact, they respond with violence. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's like, well, I don't get this. You say you want land and you want peace, and but yet when we try, Israel tries to extend the olive branch. They try to extend the hand of friendship to say, hey, we can coexist. Yet and still, it's rejected, and they're attacked.
Yeah.
And they're attacked. Listen, I mean, you start to wonder and pull back. Do y'all really want to get along? You know what I'm saying? do y'all really want to coexist?
Right.
Because, you know, we can do, this is not hard. And you see all these failed attempts at talks. I mean, you just keep kind of going around and around and around and around and around the circle. Listen, negotiations are not hard when you find out what the other side wants. Everyone's wants something on each side, and then at a certain point, you got to realize, well, I can't have this or I can't have all of that, and you're willing to make some compromises. You're willing to lose some, and you look at Israel has made so many concessions. I mean, so many compromises. Mm. They've bent over backwards. They're patient. I'm just amazed, really, at the great patience that they have, mm-hmm. and when they're living in the cross, you know, the crosshairs of their enemies every single day.
Exactly.
I want you to see this. Well, we'll make this available for you on the Torch, but I really want you to listen to this explanation about the Palestinian Authority, their land, Israel, and give us more context of how all of this has been developing and history here. Let's get some fresh perspective, because they're talking about these talks again. They're trying to get these two sides together, and all this is about the land. Now, the UN has recognized the Palestinian Authority, but they don't have a piece of property, and they want this land. They want this land. Israel has tried so many times, mm-hmm. and yet again, it's always been, you know, they've been attacked, they've been dismissed, if you will. This is another time, and so based upon history, I think they have right to be concerned. This is not good. I want you to listen to this, and we'll talk about it some more.
On May 16th, 2011, the New York Times published an op-ed titled "The Long Overdue Palestinian State" by Mahmoud Abbas, president of the Palestinian National Authority. In that piece, Abbas called for the United Nations to formally recognize a Palestinian state based on the pre-1967 borders, regardless of negotiations with the State of Israel. The article appeared just a few days before Barack Obama's much-anticipated speech on the Arab Spring, in which the president also tried to jumpstart peace negotiations between Israel and the Palestinian Authority. To reach an agreement on a two-state solution, Obama declared, Israel must agree to return to the pre-1967 borders, modified only by mutually agreed land swaps. Now, neither Mr. Abbas nor Mr. Obama can explain how anyone could have recognized a United Nations designated Palestinian state that Palestinian leaders and the Arab states themselves have rejected. Of the troubles in Ireland, the poet William Butler Yeats once wrote, "Great hatred, little room, maimed us at the start." In Palestine at the start, there was plenty of room, more than enough room, for a prosperous Jewish state and a prosperous Arab state. After World War I ended, with the dismantling of the Ottoman Empire, the League of Nations established the Mandate for Palestine, including all of the land that is now Israel, the West Bank, and the Gaza Strip, plus the entire territory east of the Jordan River, now called the Kingdom of Jordan. The area under the mandate was as large as Syria and about half as large as Iraq, yet the total population at the time was less than 1 million, of whom 10% were Jews. It was in that vast, underdeveloped, and underpopulated territory that the British had promised in the language of the 1917 Balfour Declaration to support the establishment in Palestine of a national home for the Jewish people. The declaration also promised that nothing shall be done which may prejudice the civil and religious rights of existing non-Jewish communities in Palestine. Open Jewish immigration to the Holy Land was encouraged, as was freedom of speech, religion, and assembly for the Arabs of Palestine, rights they had sorely lacked under Turkish rule. Mired for more than two centuries in backwardness and grinding poverty, Palestinians were never recognized by the Ottoman Empire as possessing any distinctive national identity. The Palestinians quickly took advantage of their new freedom to speak bluntly, demanding a stop to the Jewish immigration which had just begun. Said one Arab representative during the Paris Peace Conference, "We will push the Zionists into the sea, or they will send us back into the desert." Aref Pasha Dajani, a Palestinian leader from Jerusalem, warned that it is impossible to live with the Jews. In all the countries where they are at present, they are not wanted because they always arrive to suck the blood of everybody. If the League of Nations will not listen to the appeal of the Arabs, this country will become a river of blood. Well, as promised, blood did flow when the Palestinian demand to end Jewish immigration was not granted. Jerusalem was the first flashpoint for regular Arab attacks on Jewish communities in April 1920. Palestinians from nearby towns poured into the old city. The Muslim mayor of Jerusalem and other notables worked up the crowd to launch a jihad against the Jews. "If we don't use force against the Zionists and against the Jews, we will never be rid of them," urged newspaper editor Arif al-Arif. The crowd shouted back, "We will drink the blood of the Jews." Shouting Islamic slogans like "Muhammad's religion was born with the sword," thousands surged through the Jewish quarter and into West Jerusalem. The mobs vented their rage against any Jew they could find, burning and looting homes and stores, and even attacking British and Arab policemen. After several days of rioting, the final toll was 6 Jews dead, hundreds beaten, and widespread destruction of property. What became known as the Nebi Musa riot was the opening shot in a 90-year war to reverse the Balfour Declaration. And things soon got worse as the Allies, to assuage the fears of Arab monarchs, separated the land east of the Jordan River out of the total area accessible to Jewish immigrants and created the Emirate of Transjordan. Reconciling the aspirations of Arabs and Jews became far more tenuous after the Balfour Declaration had to be carried out in the truncated area of Palestine from the Jordan River to the Mediterranean Sea. There was now much less room and a great deal more hatred. The decades that followed were marred by perpetual violence against the Jews, both in Palestine and in Europe. The two were often linked. Under the leadership of the Grand Mufti and President of the Supreme Muslim Council, Haj Amin al-Husseini, the Arabs of Palestine waged an endless jihad against their Jewish neighbors. When the British sent a royal commission to investigate a solution, the Jews, represented by Chaim Weizmann, pressed for a partition of the territory into two states, even if the territory assigned to the Jews was the size of a tablecloth. The Peel Commission's final report, published in July 1937, proposed such a division. The Jews were offered an independent state in a small enclave along the seacoast from Tel Aviv to the north of the country, constituting about 20% of the remaining mandate territory, while the Palestinian Arabs would get 80% for their own state. Desperate for any means to be able to bring in large numbers of the endangered European Jews, the Zionists reluctantly accepted the commission's partition plan. Led by the Mufti, the Arabs rejected partition out of hand and pressed on with the armed revolt against the mandate. The British succeeded in putting down the violence for a time. Al-Husseini was sent into exile, ultimately, in Hitler's Nazi Germany, where he lived as a special guest of the Führer. But severe limitations were placed on Jewish immigration to the Holy Land in the years leading up to the Holocaust that undoubtedly directly led to the death of many thousands of European Jews. Now, following the atrocities of the Second World War, Britain relinquished authority over the mandate to the newly formed United Nations. The UN created yet another commission to try to figure out what to do with the contested territory. The United Nations Special Committee on Palestine recommended, by a vote of 7-3, yet another two-state solution, another partition plan to the General Assembly. This plan would have seen the territory divided almost equally between Jews and Arabs. Once again, the Zionists made public their acceptance of the proposal, and once again, Arab officials announced that any partition would be met with rivers of blood. Shortly after the UN vote, the 20-member Arab League sent their newly organized Arab Liberation Army against the Jews of Palestine. Elements of five regular Arab armies from Egypt, Jordan, Syria, Iraq, and Lebanon invaded Israel on May 15, 1948. Arab League Secretary General Abdul Rahman Azzam vowed, "This will be a war of extermination and a momentous massacre, which will be spoken of like the Mongol massacres and the Crusades." But despite their overwhelming numbers and heated rhetoric, after a year of fighting, it was the Jewish state that had won a decisive victory. Based on the 1949 armistice lines, Israel's territory expanded by almost 40%. The Palestinian Arabs were the big losers. For the second time in 10 years, their leaders rejected a partition plan that would have given them independence and more land designated for their state than for the Jewish state. Instead, they ended up with nothing, and 650,000 Palestinians became refugees. Jordan's King Abdullah sent his Arab Legion to occupy the Palestinian West Bank and annex the territory to his kingdom. Egypt took the Gaza Strip and for the next 18 years denied Palestinians any civil rights. It never occurred to the rulers of Jordan or Egypt to create a state for the homeless Palestinians, nor did new Palestinian leaders like Yasser Arafat protest this occupation of their land by foreign rulers. Now, three times in the past decade, Israeli prime ministers have offered Palestinian leaders an independent state far more generous than anything Jordan and Egypt ever allowed when they controlled the West Bank and Gaza. At Camp David in 2000, Israeli Prime Minister Ehud Barak agreed to the border suggested by President Clinton that would have established a West Bank Gaza Palestinian state with some territorial adjustments and with the Palestinians getting East Jerusalem as their capital. For his part, Palestinian Liberation Organization Chairman Yasser Arafat walked out of negotiations, went back home, and launched the Second Intifada. Invoking Islamic Jew hatred as justification, the Palestinians conducted a three-year brutal campaign of suicide bombings against Israeli pizza parlors, wedding halls, and discotheques. In 2005, Israeli Prime Minister Ariel Sharon decided that it was against Israel's security interest to govern the 1.1 million Palestinians in the Gaza Strip. Sharon dismantled all of the Jewish settlements and pulled Israeli forces back across the 1967 borders between Israel and Gaza without even any land swaps. As an added bonus, Israel left the Palestinians a thriving flour export industry to help jumpstart the local economy. The Palestinians' response to this generosity? Well, first they destroyed the donated greenhouses and then they launched a war of missiles and rockets against civilian targets in Israel. In a September 2008 meeting in Jerusalem, then-Israeli Prime Minister Ehud Olmert presented President Abbas with a detailed map of a future Palestinian state that, with land swaps, would constitute close to 100% of the territory of the West Bank and Gaza prior to the June 1967 war. Olmert also offered to divide Jerusalem, enabling the Palestinians to locate their capital in the eastern half of the city. Promising to come back the next day for further discussions, Abbas took Olmert's map to his Ramallah office, just a few miles outside Jerusalem, for his aides to study. but Abbas never returned with the map. This was the last time the Israeli and Palestinian leaders met.
This is what you're seeing. I mean, this is over and over and over and over again. It's important to get context, because you look at all these refugees and you look at the Palestinian, you know, and they have no place.
Right.
But whose fault is that? I mean, I believe there was five times mm-hmm. they were offered land and they rejected it. Mm-hmm. They rejected a two-state solution. The last time, Yasser Arafat just walked off.
Yeah.
I mean, just walked off. And they just respond back with missiles and fighting. It's like
craziness.
What in the world is going on here?
All right.
You know, listen, when you can't make a deal with someone that's always trying to change mm-hmm. the terms of their deal.
Yeah.
And they don't want to make a deal with you.
Yeah, it's obvious. It's this all or nothing type thing.
Exactly.
They don't want to split it. They want it all.
And when Egypt and Jordan controlled the West Bank and the Gaza, they weren't giving up any land. They weren't making any concessions to right. the Arabs. But now, no one brings that up, you know. And the big contention is that, you know, they made an agreement just here recently. The Prime Minister of Israel,
Netanyahu,
Benjamin Netanyahu, thank you, to release about 113. Prisoners of war. These guys were terrorists who have killed Israelis. They release them as a good faith gesture just to open the talks. Can you imagine people that have been serving prison term for terrorist attacks on your people? You're releasing them. Many of the Israelis were very upset about that, but he felt that's something that he had to do to again show good faith, to say once again, we're coming to the table. This is what we're getting ready to do. But what the Palestinians wanted Israel to do is stop building these settlements on the properties. Like, we're not going to stop building that. This is, you know, we're not going to do that. We're not going to just, you know, they have right to be concerned.
Right.
They have right to be concerned. And we can just hope and pray that the United States is not involved in setting Israel up and causing them more of destruction, more mm-hmm. attacks. Listen, you want to pray. You want to be informed. You want to know the story behind the story when you're hearing news every single day. You want to know God's perspective. Listen, the land is given, you know, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. You know, that's the order. And what you're seeing now is Israel continuing mm-hmm. to share and give away. When we come back, we're going to talk about some interesting facts that you may or may not know about Israel, to broaden your perspective, to understand the apple of God's eye. We're talking about the peace talks that are about to resume again here in the next week or two with Israel and the Palestinian Authority, and it's over land. But Israel has been down this road before.
Oh, yeah.
Several times, and they've tried to give land, make peace, and yet, and still, it's always been returned with more rejection, you know, war,
violence,
yeah. violence, attacks. And all at this point we can do is pray. When you talk about patience and being able to endure and suffer much, my goodness, the Israeli people have sure endured a whole lot.
Oh my goodness.
And we need perspective. Did you know that Israel is 1/800th the size of the Arab world? 1/800th wow. the size of the Arab world. And you think, where does all this venom come from? It's like, are you serious? It's 9 miles wide at its widest point. 9 miles. I don't even think that the average commute in America is not even, you know what I'm saying, is not, is more than 9 miles, but it's literally 9 miles.
What about Israel?
Israel.
No, I think it's more than that. It's like 60.
Well, information out here says it's not 9 miles wide at its widest point and 290 miles long north and west.
Okay.
This is Stand With Us, an organization that puts this information out, facts, and we'll make this related for you on the torch so that you can see it. I thought so too. I thought it was longer, you know, wider than that.
Mm-hmm.
But you're looking nonetheless at a, country that has 8,000 square miles, pretty much. I mean, the state of New Jersey is 8,729 square miles.
All right.
So it's smaller than the state of New Jersey. I mean, you can probably travel New Jersey from, you know, the top of New Jersey all the way to the bottom, maybe to Cape May, maybe 3 hours, 3.5 hours max, you know, max.
Right.
And that's it. I mean, it's a very, very small state. In fact, Israel can fit in the size of California 19 times.
Wow.
It's just perspective, you know, perspective. Here's this little tiny itty bitty country, and yet they're wanting to take this country out. And it's like, are you serious? You know, is this for real? Winston Churchill was quoted in 1920 as saying, "It is manifestly right that the scattered Jews should have a national center and a national home, and be reunited, and where else but in Palestine, with which for 3,000 years they have been intimately and profoundly associated." This is Winston Churchill saying this.
Mm-hmm.
You know, another person says, "Who can challenge the rights of the Jews in Palestine? Good Lord, historically, it is really your country." This is the mayor of Jerusalem in 1899. When you think about the number of countries by religious majorities, listen to this. You have 56 countries that have a religious majority that are Islamic, 49 countries that have a religious majority that are Roman Catholic, 20 countries that have a religious majority that are Protestant, 12 Eastern Orthodox, 4 Hindu. There's only one country that has a religious majority that are Jewish. It's Israel.
Right.
I mean, look at the scheme of things. Look at how large, you know, the world is, and what's happening in response to Israel. And it's a blessed land. I mean, they're a blessed people. And you can just see over and over the years what, you know, what has happened and what they've contributed to society. And even in the areas of technology, I mean, it's just absolutely amazing. I don't know if you knew this, but Israel, talk about innovations. Israel has the second highest per capita rate of university degrees following Canada.
Mm-hmm.
Israel has the highest ratio of educated scientists and technicians, with 135 per 10,000 citizens compared to 81 in the U.S. Listen, this is the highest ratio of educated scientists in the world. Next to Silicon Valley, Israel has the highest concentration of high-tech companies in the world. And Israel has the third largest number of NASDAQ-listed companies in the world, behind U.S. and China.
Mm.
Now, this is a country that's smaller than the state of New Jersey.
Right.
And listen to this. It has the third largest number of NASDAQ-listed companies in the world, behind U.S. and China. We can fit 19 size, you know, Israel's inside the state of California, square mile wise. Mm-hmm. They're a blessed people, and they're the apple of God's eye. And we just want to make sure that we stay informed, that we're not ignorantly just, you know, uninformed, uneducated, looking at the events that are happening on a television screen or on a computer screen, a laptop, iPad, whatever you have, and just making conclusions and just going along with what a newscaster says. But that we have a godly perspective, and we have history, and we have context to say, listen, these are God's people, and we want to do our very best to support them and support American policy that's only going to bless them and not hurt them. Not to mention that they are our number one and only ally in the Middle East. Mm-hmm. You know, it was just reported that the president sent $1 billion to aid in Syria. And it's just like, my goodness, let's stand with Israel.
You've just been listening to the highlights from the Daily VFN Radio program, where we're keeping the conversation light. Don't forget to share it with your friends. Find out more and listen to the daily VFN radio program in its entirety at VFNTV.com or with your mobile VFN TV app on your mobile phone or device. That's VFNTV.com. VFN Radio is brought to you by friends like you and our underwriters. Find out more how you can join them by giving or how you, your business or ministry, can become an underwriter at VFNTV.com.